Second Samuel. So we were talking last week about Absalom. Remember, and David's sons, Absalom, attacked and took advantage of David's daughter from another wife. And so the other brother had him killed. And so then Absalom, the one who had defended his sister, took the throne from David, including a public display of taking David's concubines. And then Absalom is gone to battle. They're going to kill David so that Absalom can be the unquestioned king. And Joab kills Absalom. He got his hair caught in a tree, remember? And Joab killed him. News reaches King David as he's in exile in Mahanaim, and they say, David, your son is dead. And David weeps. That's what brings us to chapter 19. In verse 33 of chapter 18, it says, the king was much moved and went up to the chamber over the gate. You have to have a picture of the cities in that region. You know, they're walled cities. And then there's a major entrance. But in that wall, many times, are homes. Remember Rahab? She lived in, you know, on the wall. And in the book of Acts, in fact, remember Paul was let down in a basket over the wall. Well, that's because that was somebody's house. When they rebuilt the wall around the city of Jerusalem, you know, each one had to build their own part. That was their home. And so above the gate, of course, there's what we would consider maybe a loft apartment of sorts. And David went there and he wept. As he went, thus he said, Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son. And with all of the heartache that Absalom had brought to David, yet his grief is exceeding, as it would be for any of us. Verse 1, it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. That's normal, right? Wouldn't you consider that normal? Who killed Absalom? Joab. So word gets to Joab that David's weeping over what's happened. So does Joab go to David and say, King, look, I'm sorry it happened. I know he's your son, but look at what he's done. I was defending you. Is that what he did? No. He goes in there indignant with quite an attitude. The narrator says the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people, for the people heard say, that day, how the king was grieved for a son, which they should have anticipated. No matter how much grief they bring, we love our children. We might not like them sometimes, but we love them. They're our kids, right? Verse 3, the people got them by stealth that day into the city, as the people being ashamed steal away when they flee in the battle. So they, you know, as they walked by, they knew what was going on, and they just kind of snuck past. No greetings, no conversation in the street. So imagine the streets are quiet as the people approach and enter. Verse 4, the king covered his face. The king cried with a loud voice. The only thing they can hear is David's weeping. Oh, my son Absalom. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Joab came into the house to the king and said, thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life, and the lives of thy sons and thy daughters, the lives of thy wives, and the lives of thy concubines. And I think everybody knows this, but a concubine is just a live-in. You know, they're not married, not an official wife, but that's, you know, so that's her. We might even say a slave, a female slave. that served whatever purpose he desired. Verse 6, and that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. Would you say that's harsh? That's kind of an overreaction. For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive if Absalom had lived and all we had died, then it had pleased thee well. You think that's extreme? Why is Joab being so ugly? So mean, okay, trying to provoke him? Because he wanted to be celebrated for doing that. He wanted, you know, he wanted to have a parade in his honor that he's the one who brought the victory. A chain about his neck. Maybe wear the king's crown and a robe for a day. Now he wanted to be celebrated, but his celebration's been taken away. It's pride. It's ego. It's selfishness. And Joab could have gone to King David and said, you know what we've already said, I'm sorry this happened, man. But he couldn't get past his own self. And he couldn't get past what it had cost him. And what might David have done? What did David do to the one that killed Saul? Executed him. And Saul wasn't his son. Saul was like a father to him. And he was the king. Now Absalom was the king. Not anointed, but coronated. David could have had Joab killed, but he didn't. He didn't react that way. And so Joab's advice in verse 7, arise, go forth, and speak comfortably to thy servants, for I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night. And that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now. So in other words, you look weak. That's that attitude that men can't cry, right? Don't show emotion. And that, you know, but again, it's the arrogance of Joab that's driving this. It's not reasonable at all. But David, being vulnerable, accepts that counsel, comes down out of the apartment, verse 8, and sat in the gate. Buried his emotions, which we know is bad for us, right? Buried his emotions, sucked it up, pulled himself up by his bootstraps, as we say. And they told unto all the people, behold, the king doth sit in the gate. And all the people came before the king, for they had all fled into their, every man to his tent. So they all came, they had snuck away, showing honor and showing grief, joining him in his sorrow, but now they come back just, you know, to greet him. We have got to not be like Joab, right? If anything, Joab could have gone to the people and said, hey, let's declare 30 days of mourning for Absalom. He had done wrong. We see what he had done. Absalom was not innocent, but it's David's son. Right, with Bathsheba's son, that's right. I'll go to him. He can't come back to me, right? And so David shook it off and got down there and greeted the people. And then all the people were at strife, verse 9, throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king saved us out of the hands of our enemies, and he delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines, and now he has fled out of the land for Absalom. And the people are like, where's our king? We want our king back. And this is a picture of, let's not forget what he's done for us. You ever fall out with somebody? Anybody ever fall out with somebody? But we got to not forget what they've done for us. Everybody has a bad chapter. Everybody has a bad season and a bad day. And in that season, they may be arrogant and they may be even mean. But let's not forget our history with them. And if we can find a way to renew that friendship and that fellowship, and it's not a one-way street, it's got to be both of us. Let's not forget the relationship we had. Let's not forget the friendship we had. And let's not forget what they've done. Look, he delivered us from our enemies. Now, this is somebody who really did something for us. Verse 10, Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead. Now, therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back? Let's bring him back. And how many of us have ever made mistakes? But if it's something that we can turn around, why wouldn't we? Have you ever known somebody that made a mistake, knew they made a mistake, but once they made the mistake, they weren't willing to admit they were wrong and correct it? Here's our chance, guys. Let's correct the mistake. Let's go back and fix this. Verse 11, King David sent to Zadok and Abiathar, the priests. This is David, saying, speak to the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house? Seeing the speech of all Israel is come to the king, even to his house. He's hearing these rumors all the way over where he is, that people want him back in Jerusalem. Why are you the last ones to make a move? Why aren't you leading in this? Y'all are the priests. Y'all are the leaders. People look to you for counsel. Why aren't you out front? Verse 12, you're my brethren, my bones and my flesh. Wherefore then are you the last to bring back the king? Verse 13, say ye to Amasa, are thou not of my bone and of my flesh? God do so to me and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab. Who was Amasa? He was the captain of Absalom's army. And David says, you tell him, I'll give him Joab's job. He'll be the secretary of defense. He'll be in Joab's place. Verse 14, he bowed the heart of all the men of Judah, even as the heart of one man. They were all in consent. They sent word to the king, return thou and all thy servants. Verse 15, so the king returned, came to Jordan. This is the river Jordan. Judah came to Gilgal. So the people of the south country came out to Gilgal. Remember, that was right there at Jordan, where they crossed initially when they came back from Egypt. To go meet the king and to conduct the king over Jordan. And Shimei, who's Shimei? Y'all remember him? The one that was kicking dust and calling, he's a bloody man, and he throwing rocks at him. And Shimei came out. Verse 17, there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him. And Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, remember who Ziba is? Ziba is the servant of Mephibosheth. He's the one who met David on the way out of town with food and all kinds of stuff and said, oh, Mephibosheth didn't come because he figured maybe he could be king. So he's hanging back. That was his story. Verse 18, they went over a ferry boat to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. Shimei fell down before the king as he was coming over. Talk about making a mistake and trying to make amends, right? Verse 19, and he said unto the king, let not my lord impute iniquity to me, neither do thou remember that which thy servant did perversely the day that my lord the king went out of Jerusalem, that the king should take it to his heart. For thy servant doth know that I have sinned. And look at the spectacle of Shimei as he's just cussing and fussing and throwing dirt and kicking dust and throwing rocks. I mean, he made a spectacle of himself. But now he comes with contrition and bows himself and said, I want to be the first one to greet you on your return. Verse 21, Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this because he cursed the Lord's anointed? This same one who wanted to take his head off a while ago, right? He He has not let it go. He's holding a grudge. And David said, verse 22, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be adversaries unto me? Why are you wanting to pick a fight? Right, this is a good day. Let's not mess it up with grudges and animosity. Shall there any man be put to death this day in Israel? For do not I know that I am this day king over Israel? And what's the king's job? What's the number one job of government? Protecting the people, protecting the borders, right? Protecting the people. That's the number one job, right? So if his number one job is to protect the people, he says, this is one of my people. How can I hold a grudge and let one of my people, this is a pastor's heart, and let one of my people be destroyed? The king said, verse 23, thou shalt not die. Verse 24, and the Mephibosheth, son of Saul, came down to meet the king. Now, and this is important because, you know, when we read it initially, Ziba says, oh, Mephibosheth stayed back because he thinks he's going to get everything back and be the king. And we say, well, nobody really knows the truth on that. Well, Mephibosheth shows up, and here's the key. Verse 24, he had neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed to the day he came again in peace. So he has been in a state of fasting or mourning or suffering, you know, in anticipation that the king would return. And David asked him in verse 25, wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? Why didn't you go? And he answered, verse 26, my lord, O king, my servant Ziba deceived me. Thy servant said, I will saddle and I may ride thereon and go to the king because thy servant is lame. And he slandered thy servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet didst thou set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right therefore have I yet to cry any more unto the king? I can expect nothing from you. I have no rights. Do whatever you feel is right. I'm not going to beg. I had no hope and you gave me hope, so whatever you want to do is fine with me. Verse 29, the king said, why speakest thou any more of the matter? I have said, thou and Ziba divide the land. And keep, you know, whatever is Saul's, y'all could just do what you want with it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. How many of y'all ever say that? I don't want to talk about it anymore. Verse 30, Mephibosheth said, yea, let him take it all, for as much as my lord the king has come again in peace to his own house. And Barzillai the Gileadite came down from Rogelim and went over Jordan with the king to conduct him over Jordan. Now Barzillai was a very aged man. How old was he? 80 years old, 80. That's the new 50, isn't it? And he had provided the king of sustenance while he lay at Maanim, for he was a very great man. He had been bankrolling whatever the king and his people needed. He had just been taken care of because it says he was a great man, which means he had great wealth. The king said to Barzillai, come thou over with me, and I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem. I'll pay you back. I'll show you hospitality and kindness. Verse 34, Barzillai said to the king, how long have I to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I'm this day 80 years old, and can I discern between good and evil? Can thy servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any more the voice of singing men and singing women? Wherefore then should thy servant be yet a burden to my lord the king? He says, look, king, I appreciate the offer, but, it's just not appealing to me, really is what he's saying. Anybody ever invite you to go somewhere and you don't really want to go? So it's just not my idea of fun. Just not, you know. I can't hear as like I used to. I can't taste like I used to. You know, it's just not appealing. It doesn't impress me. But verse 36, thy servant will go a little way over the Jordan with the king. And why should the king recompense it me with such a reward? Let thy servant, I pray thee, turn back again, that I may die in my own city and be buried by the grave of my father and my mother. But behold, thy servant Chimam, let him go over with my lord the king. Do to him what shall seem good unto thee. The king answered, Chimam shall go over with me, and I will do to him that which shall seem good unto thee. And whatsoever thou shalt require of me, that will I do for thee. And so there's a big welcome. And you know, these people keep showing up. And he tells us, and it's great that he includes this in there, because he could have just said, and King David went back to Jerusalem. Right? But people are going to greet him. And he really feels welcome. Like, you know, he left with, you know, his servants and just whatever they could carry. And it was a shameful, humiliating journey. But as he returns, they send a ferry across the Jordan so that he can get on there and cross over, you know, dry instead of walking through the river. And all of his people. And then when he gets to the other side, to the homeland, to Israel, there are all these people. And one by one, they come up and they express their joy that he's back. That remind you of anything? Nothing? Nothing? Okay. Not quite what I had in mind, but okay. Anybody else? What do we talk about Jordan as being? And it's not a very good analogy, but we talk about crossing over Jordan, right? As being going where? To heaven. Right? So think about this. As we are going to heaven, who are we going to meet at the gate? Who's going to be there? Right? Well, loved ones, right? I'm looking forward to seeing some people when I get there. How about you? And it's just, again, something we think about, seeing those that we love. But one by one, hey, we're glad you made it. Right? I know. We're glad you're here. Glad to see you. We've missed you. We're celebrating your return, or we're celebrating your arrival. And so each one is greeting David as he comes. And it's great. It's the way it should be. It's like when you get home after you've been gone and your dog meets you at the door, right? Wagging that tail, right? So glad you're home. And I mean, if we have friends like that, right? If your family does that, you're blessed. Or they run, hey, daddy's home. It's the most wonderful thing, right? And that's what they're doing here with David. So, but then we have a problem. Of course, we have a problem. Because the people of Israel, remember, the nation is divided in the southern and the northern. So the north is Israel, the south is Judah, and in the middle you have Samaria. And Samaria is the mixture between, you know, they're half Jew, half Gentile. And so you have two different factions mainly, Israel and Judah. And Israel's mad. Why is Israel mad? Because they didn't think of it first. Because they didn't do it. By the way, did they have the ability to do it the whole time? They had the ability to do it. But they didn't do it. So they waited for somebody else to do it, and then they got jealous because they did it. Verse 41, behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away and have brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over Jordan? And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is near kin to us, wherefore then be ye angry for this matter? Have we eaten at all the king's cost, or hath he given us any gift? I mean, what are you mad about? You ever, people get mad and you go, why are you mad? What's the problem? And what is the problem? Right? It wasn't their idea. They didn't do it first. It's shame is really what it boils down to. They feel guilty. Verse 43, the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, "We have 10 parts in the king. We have also more right in David than ye. Why then did ye despise us that our advice should not be first had in bringing back of our king?" And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. Because remember, and we read this, Israel says, "Why is the king not home yet?" But they didn't go get him. David has to send word to the priests to send, you know, to request him to come back. And Amasa, right, to make sure that David didn't come back into a battle. Amasa, right? Y'all need to say, "King, come home." But Israel didn't go get him and say, "Well, come, we'll just establish a throne here, build your house, and you can be king in Galilee," right? Or wherever. But they didn't do it. Now they're mad. And as is usually the case, that was one person's idea who was loud and obnoxious and led the crowd. All right, so the difference between a peaceful protest or a peaceful demonstration and a riot. That's the difference. One person gets everybody all riled up, and all of a sudden now it's a wolf pack mentality. Instead of just getting along. So here we are in chapter 20, verse 1. There happened to be there a man of Belial, which means what? He's basically a devil, right? Whose name was Sheba, son of Bichri, a Benjamite. Who are the Benjamites? Who else was a Benjamite? Saul, right? The former king. So, guys, these grudges that they're holding, they go way back. And instead of letting it go and bringing Israel back to a point of peace, we're holding on to these old grudges and we're still trying to keep things stirred. So he blew a trumpet, the Bible says. And he said, "We have no part in David, neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel." Right? We don't have to put up with this. Let's go home. Verse 2, so every man of Israel went up after David and followed Sheba the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah clave unto their king from Jordan even to Jerusalem. So all the way back, there were people welcoming him home. David came to his house at Jerusalem. And those 10 concubines that Absalom had taken and made a public display of, David separated them and he took care of them, but they were never included as his women again. And I know that sounds, you know, terrible, but I don't know how else you want me to explain it. Verse 4, then said the king to Amasa, "Assemble the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present." Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time. David said to Abishai, "Now shall Sheba, the son of Bichri, do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou and thy Lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get him fenced cities and escape us." And so they went after him, you know. Who's Amasa? He was the leader of Absalom's army. Verse 8, when they were at the great stone, which is at Gibeon, Amasa went before them. Joab's garment that he had put on was girded to him. And upon it, a girdle with a sword fastened upon his loins and the sheath thereof. And as he went forth, it fell out. So what are we seeing in this verse? Okay, so Joab was the captain, right? And he had a uniform. But when Joab left with David, Amasa became the secretary of defense. And he went in the closet and he found Joab's uniform and he put it on. Because why? Because now he's the Secretary of Defense of Israel. And so as he's going along, he doesn't realize it, his sword fell off. Why? He couldn't fill it out, right? He couldn't fill Joab's shoes. Verse 9, Joab said to Amasa, "Art thou in health, my brother?" And Joab took Amasa by the beard with the right hand to kiss him. But Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand, so he smote him therewith in the fifth rib. Yes, brutal, isn't it? And Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. So Joab now has eliminated his competition for Secretary of Defense, or Captain of the Army. So Amasa's out of the picture, and he and Abishai pursue Sheba because Sheba is the revolutionary who's trying to divide the country north and south again and keep them from following after David. But what did Sheba do? Sheba went into a city, and he hid himself, which is exactly what David said. He's going to get into a fenced city. We'll never be able to get him out. So they, verse 13, when he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue after Sheba. Verse 14, he went through all the tribes of Israel to Abel and to Beth-Maacah and all the Berites, and they were gathered together and went also after him. So everybody's joining in. They got this whole force of people pursuing after Sheba. Verse 15, they came and besieged him and Abel of Beth-Maacah, and they cast up a bank against the city. So y'all understand how they would do this with a city, is they would make a ramp. And so they're throwing rocks and putting dirt, and eventually, you know, after a while, they've got enough of a ramp that they can get to the top of the wall. And once they get to the top of the wall, they can do anything they want with the city. And that's how they fought battles back then. It was common. Verse 16, then cried a wise woman out of the city, "Hear, hear, say, I pray you, unto Joab, come near hither, that I may speak with thee." He was come near to her, and the woman said, "Art thou Joab?" He answered, "I'm he." She said to him, "Hear the words of thine handmaid." And he answered, "I do hear." Verse 18, she spake, saying, "They were wont to speak in old times, saying, they shall surely ask counsel at Abel. And so they ended the matter. I'm one of them that are peaceable, faithful in Israel." So she's saying, look, this city has a reputation of being peaceful and wise. Like, people come and ask us, and we're like judges. You know, we give the balanced answer. And she says, "And I'm one of them. What is it that you need? You know, instead of attacking us, how about you just talk to us?" That's a great idea, isn't it? How about a conversation? Verse 20, Joab answered and said, Far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so, but a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba, son of Bichri by name, has lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I'll depart from the city. The woman said to Joab, "Behold, his head will be thrown over the wall." It was brutal times, wasn't it? And so they did. And that was it. So Amasa is gone, Absalom's gone, and Sheba's gone. So now we've got David back on the throne and Joab back as the Secretary of War, if you will, the captain of the army. Chapter 21, and we can just wrap this up since the bell's already hit. There was a famine. David says, "Lord, did we miss something? What's wrong?" And the Lord says, "Well, it's for the Gibeonites. So Saul attacked them, and nothing's ever been done to Israel to balance that. And so you've got a famine." And so he goes to Gibeon. He says, "What can we do to make up and make peace?" And they said, "Deliver the sons of Saul." And so David did deliver sons of Saul, saving Mephibosheth, of course. And then the scale was balanced again with the Lord. All right? Comments, questions, criticisms? You know, there are chapters, obviously, as we've just been through in the Bible, that are quite shocking to us of the ways of the people and the violence of the people. But guys, that is life. And that was life back then. And we can't just ignore history. We can't whitewash it. We can't just say, well, we don't want to tell all these stories. I mean, I do the best I can to make it publicly acceptable, but, you know, the Bible is the Bible. And we're going to read it and study it and come across it. Sister Tammy. Because he wasn't back on time, he was late for work. Right? I mean, that's a pretty harsh penalty for being late for work, isn't it? Well, it doesn't say that. It says he wasn't back when he was appointed. But remember, David did not direct them to go after Amasa, just direct them to go after Sheba. But it's a good point, is that maybe Joab felt that he was, number one, you're wearing my clothes, right? And number two, I don't really believe you're loyal to the king. So, all right, good question, good point. Let's take a break.